Hello, Ready Gang. Welcome back to the Gutowski Files. Yes, Steven was missing in action. We will talk about that here in a moment. But he is back. Your second favorite person on this podcast, Steven Gutowski, is with us again. Steven, how are you, sir? Wow.
I'm much worse now that I'm been demoted to second of two.
Wow. What can I tell you?
Just kidding.
So Steven is dressed up. For those of you not watching on the app, he is all gussied up. Yeah. We'll talk about that also here in a moment. He was sick. He is getting better. Part of the reason we didn't get together last week was
still a little sick.
Right. Was that Steven was in New York covering the NRA trial. So tell us, how is that going, and what did you observe while you were there?
Yeah, I was pretty sick for that. I went to SHOT Show, which you missed because you were sick. Yep. So it's been a very rough couple weeks for this podcast here.
It has.
But at SHOT Show, shockingly, I got sick. At least that's my assumption, because the symptoms came on right about after I landed in New York to cover the NRA trial. So I was already there. And luckily, one of the interesting things about the trial is the little attention that's being paid to it. So there's a lot of social distancing opportunities in the courtroom, because there weren't a lot of people watching this trial.
That's surprising.
There's one takeaway from what I saw, just pretty empty courtroom. There's a couple reporters, including myself, but maybe half a dozen. And that was about it.
Did you happen to see Mr. LaPierre? Did you wink at him? Did you guys exchange a knowing glance or anything? Or was he on the stand?
That was why I went up there, because the trial is like 6 weeks long or something about that. And so obviously I don't have the resources to go and sit in New York City in Manhattan for 6 weeks. The Breland would go bankrupt if I tried to do that. So I've been trying to go up for key moments. And one of the key moments, of course, is Wayne LaPierre's testimony in the AG side of the trial, which is where the two of those days that I was up there. And yes, LaPierre was certainly there. He was in person. He testified in person. He also watched a bunch of the testimony himself in person. So, that was some of the key stuff. One of the remarkable things to me was that there were still revelations about some of these questionable expenses that came out during this trial. I mean, it's been 5 years. A lot of this stuff has been reported on ad nauseum, right? And yet still we got details of private helicopter trips that Wayne LaPierre and other NRA employees and their families were taking to NASCAR races to beat the traffic.
That one really caught me off guard. Like, John Correa and I, for the record, both went to our first NASCAR race in 2023. I got tickets and they're like, I want to check it. I've never been to one. And I got to tell you, it was him, me, and our lovely spouses. And I think we sat in traffic by the time we got close to the thing for 2 hours, just in gridlock traffic. Like everyone else so
have
to do. And certainly you should have
joined the NRA.
Membership dues, basically, money to get your wife over the traffic is just beyond the pale. That really bothered me when I heard that.
Yeah, he defended this. Well, one of the interesting things about that is he admitted it was to beat the traffic, when most of the private flight expenses that he's defended, and he hasn't defended all of them. Some of them he admits were wrong, mainly the ones that he was not actually on when it was his family members, primarily his niece and her husband, who would take the private jet flights in addition to him. But most of the time, the private jet flights that he took, he justifies as and a number of other expenses associated with some of these allegations, justifies as security necessities. He did that for all kinds of stuff. But it's not necessarily a new thing, right? Even he's extended that to mosquito treatment at his house or landscaping done at his house. He claimed they were both security requirements because he had security guards outside of his house that were getting bitten up by the bugs. So the NRA paid for his mosquito treatment. He got a security consultation on how to arrange, his landscaping to prevent people from trying to attack his house. That's a running theme for most of the expenses that that have been brought up in context of all this, but he didn't use that with the helicopters, which was interesting. Instead, He defended that by saying it was part of this and a number of the other things, yacht trips and luxury vacations. A lot of those expenses he defended on the stand as being necessary for the NRA's pursuit of high dollar donors or celebrities to give the NRA a greater mainstream appeal. That was his explanation for the NASCAR stuff. You know, he was able to meet NASCAR drivers and convince some of them to work with the NRA. In fact, Richard Childress was the former first vice president of the NRA. Of course, he was that when Oliver North was president, and he resigned alongside Oliver North during the whole internal fight. But, you know, they're just sort of an example of one area where, I mean, he did get some of these celebrities, and he also cited Dean Cain, who's played Superman, I believe, on TV, and is on the NRA board. He cited Montel Williams as someone else who's done stuff for the NRA because of these sort of celebrity events that they would host, that they, you know, that led to these large fees and luxurious travel accommodations. So, you know, that was part of his testimony. But, you know, another part of it was also just admitting to wrongdoing to a degree, right? Like, so those private flights where it was his family and not him, he admitted that was wrong, not disclosing certain expenses, like meals that he had with David McKenzie, who's the NRA contractor that owns the yachts that he had traveled on, that were, you know, become a big part of this story. You know, you're supposed to disclose anytime you give a gift. He gave sometimes sort of weird expensive gifts to David McKenzie, like an $800 candlestick holder was something he used NRA money to pay for in order to give it as a gift to the McKenzies. You know, there was a lot of that sort of thing. Again, not really diverging from how the NRA has tried to defend itself in these cases, which is to say that there was wrongdoing, but it's been corrected and fixed. That was a lot of Wayne LaPierre's testimony pointed to that. And it was clearly the theme of the NRA lawyers, who are separate from Wayne LaPierre's lawyers as well.
Yeah, I got to say, just as an average person, you know, formerly a dues paying member, I have to ask myself how many people are we drawing in? I mean, the purpose of having a celebrity endorsement, I guess, is so that people who are like, oh, cool, look, it's Dean Cain. Hey, look, it's Montel Williams, or maybe going to join the NRA. I'm not sure exactly what the point of that is supposed to be. And I would hope that we would get people, celebrity or not, that were in it for the cause, that believed in the Second Amendment and wanted to help make a difference, and not because they, you know, and I'm not casting any aspersions on anyone I named. I don't know what they received or didn't receive, but, you know, a fancy vacation or a nice, you know, a steak dinner shouldn't be a prerequisite if you really believe in the cause of you speaking up and, you know, lending your endorsement to the NRA or to the pro, you know, the Second Amendment movement in general. I don't see the return on investment. And honestly, that I'm going to go back to this really quick. The helicopter trip over the traffic is what I think sometimes people in these positions can't hear themselves or understand how they're being perceived. Who's down there in that traffic, right? Probably a goodly number of those NASCAR fans are also NRA members. And it's like, it's like Bush looking after Katrina, looking down out of the helicopter. That perception wasn't great of, you know, I'm surveying the scene, looking down on the little people underneath you who were sitting in traffic like everyone else. It's a bad look. That's just my two cents.
Yeah. Although I think it's important to keep in mind with this trial that there's a difference between mismanagement and malfeasance, right? Mm-hmm. Especially under the law. Excuse me here.
You're a trooper. I appreciate you being here.
Oh man. Fun times. Still getting over that cold, but there's obviously a line where something goes from, this was a bad idea, it didn't work, or it was, you spent too much money to try and recruit these celebrities and they don't bring in that much benefit to the organization. You know, there's all sorts of arguments you could have on that front. The key question in this case, though, is what rises to the level of requiring a court to step in. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that also comes down to the question of whether or not these issues are ongoing, which was a big part of this case as well. Like, Wayne LaPierre is stepping aside in the middle of the case. He's now no longer the head of the NRA. So are the issues still present there? Have they been fixed? And the AG argues no. And one of the last people left that's an individual defendant in this case that still works for the NRA is the general counsel, John Frazier. And, you know, he had interesting testimony as well. Most of his painted this picture of somebody who maybe is not incompetent necessarily, but is, he only had 18 months of private practice experience before they made him the top lawyer at the NRA, which is, you know, a $400 million organization. He had had experience in a non-legal role at the NRA before that, but he didn't have any experience as a general counsel, or he was also the secretary of the board too. He had no experience of that. They combined both his positions in him, and he testified to a series of major decisions that the group made that he was not involved in, essentially, you know, whether to sue their top media contractor, whether to try and file for bankruptcy. You know, a lot of these major legal decisions he was left out of, and instead testified that the Brewer firm, the outside law firm that's been representing the NRA and still is in this case, that they were really sort of the center of decision making and strategizing, and he was not really involved in a lot of that.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and transition to our next topic because I can hear your voice faltering, and you've got to be on something as I said. And I don't want to wear all your voice here. So the reason Stephen is dressed so nicely, for those of you viewing on the app or on the Expert Channel, thank you for that, by the way, is that he is due to be on CNN to discuss an ongoing criminal case regarding a terrible shooting in Michigan. So, Steve, tell us about that.
Yes. So this was the novel prosecution of the parents of a school shooter in Michigan, the Crumbleys. And this week, right now, in fact, we're waiting to hear a final verdict in the case against the mother, who is accused essentially of gross negligence rising to the level of criminality, to essentially manslaughter, that she did not do enough to either recognize or follow through on the signs that her son was having mental health issues. And additionally, that she and her husband didn't do enough to secure the firearm that they bought for him, which he ended up using in the shooting to kill four people. So they're not necessarily, they're not accused of working with him in any way or planning the attack or knowing about the attack beforehand, anything of that nature, but they're accused of being negligent, of not doing enough to prevent the attack given the circumstances. And obviously I think in this case, the circumstances are fairly unique. Hmm. You know, there was a meeting. This is the shooting where there was a meeting the day of, where the Crumbly son had drawn pictures and written messages like, you know, help me, blood everywhere, you know, indicating that he was having violent thoughts. Mm-hmm. And a teacher noticed that and had him taken to school administrators, who called the parents and had them brought in for a meeting, where the parents apparently did not take the son out of school to go get him mental health treatment immediately, and instead let him, said that they'd be more comfortable with him staying in school that day because they didn't want to miss work. The school administrators did not view him as a immediate threat, apparently, and nobody searched his backpack,
right,
which is where he had the gun that his parents had bought him initially. So you know, that's a pretty unusual set of circumstances that does not make anyone involved in that meeting look very good.
Right.
But the key question is whether that in addition to the other evidence that's been presented of perhaps the parents ignoring signs of mental health troubles, and not doing enough to secure the gun, you know, does that rise to level of criminality? And if it does, that would be a pretty surprising turn of events that may change how these sorts of cases are approached in the future, where you try to hold more than just the shooter accountable. So it's pretty big news in that sense.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you mentioned in our pre-brief that initially the husband and wife were being tried sort of together as a couple, but they split the two prosecutions separately. Do you know why they did that?
No, you know, I will say that certainly in the wife's trial, she did. Her argument was that in regards to the gun, that was not something she viewed as her responsibility. It was something she viewed as her husband's responsibility, that he was the one who knew more about firearms and was more comfortable with them and would be responsible for securing the gun. Mm-hmm. And so that may be why they're not together, because she's sort of trying to lay blame on that point, at least at his feet. Now, you know, we're talking about a 15-year-old. So this is a teenager. So securing your guns against small children is obviously a different task than securing them against a teenager who has a bit more of an ability to get around your security measures. I believe that there was some question as to whether the key for the safe that they had for this gun, you know, they didn't buy the gun and then just give it to him. At least that's the testimony. Mm-hmm. That's been presented in the case. They kept it locked away, but the problem was where they kept the key and whether they were doing anything to make sure that he didn't know where the key was or doing enough. And obviously they didn't, because he, you know, we know he got the gun and used it. And then they also didn't check to see that the gun was secured at home after that meeting. So right. You know, a lot of failure points. The question is whether or not the negligence involved is so bad that it rises to the level of criminality, which is not something we've really seen before in these sorts of situations.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't this the first, I think this is the first time, certainly I've heard of parents being charged with a criminal offense for something like this. You mentioned it was novel. Is it truly novel? Is this the first time this has ever happened, to your knowledge, in the United States?
As far as I'm aware, in being directly linked to the actual shooting, yes. There was recently, this does seem to be a bit of a trend to try and hold parents more responsible for school shootings, where there was a Virginia shooting where a six-year-old, I believe, was got his hands on his mother's gun and shot a teacher. If you recall that incident, they charged the mother, but they charged her with having possession of weed and a gun. So you can, not exactly, it's not connected to the actual shooting.
Right.
It's just kind of, that's what they could charge her with. So they did, if that makes sense. So sort of an effort to hold her responsible by charging her with a different crime, because they couldn't necessarily charge her with the actual shooting itself.
Yeah, I think, you know, we normally don't get mental reps on the Gutowski files. That's not usually what we're here for. We're here for to inform the public about, you know, the goings on in the world of guns and the Second Amendment. By the way, go over to thereload.com and check that out before I forget. Consider getting a membership. I think the mental rep here is, you know, Stephanie Widener, when she teaches her classes, likes to tell the people in the classes, hey, look, if you are, you know, if a robbery has started, if a school shooting has started, if anything has started to kick off, or you sense it is imminent, it is important that you rapidly and radically accept reality, accept that the thing is happening. And I think if I had to guess, this is speculation on my part, but if I had to guess, I would say the parents just wishing it away, where just the normalcy bias kicked in. Well, there's no way, you know, our son could never do this, or this is too much for me to think about right now. I got a lot of things on my plate. I don't want to deal with it. And I think the lesson here is that if this is happening in your family, if this is happening in your classroom, it's important to, once you've identified it, I mean, they had this identified. They had to, you know, the school had done things right initially by pulling him aside, bringing the parents in. This is what we want to see. You know, when this sort of stuff happens and you see these warning signs, we want to see everyone did everything right until they didn't. And I think if this is you, if you have someone in your life, doesn't have to be a kid, doesn't have to be a school shooter, it could be anybody who you're worried about this happening, don't wish it away and don't let your normalcy bias prevent you from taking any action that you can to help prevent it. Stephen, I'm gonna cut this one short today. I know people have missed you, but I want you to have some voice left for CNN should you be called there later. Is there anything I forgot to mention, Stephen? I don't want to leave anything out.
Well, there's the, right. No, you know, look, I think this is a hard case for the prosecution to prove just because it deals with showing a very high level of negligence. And the most negligent thing they did was not address that drawing the day of the shooting. And, you know, the school gave them the advice that he wasn't a threat and let him go back to class. So it is hard to show that they had a real understanding he was about to commit a school shooting at that moment. And so, you know, it's one of those things where everybody wants to see people held responsible. And there's people perhaps very understandably might morally blame these parents for not doing enough to prevent this from happening. But there's a different question as to whether or not it rises to the level of criminal responsibility, which I guess we'll see what the jury says.
Yeah, indeed. This will be an important case moving forward. Folks, as I said earlier, if you are lamenting the lack of down-the-middle, sane, sober reporting on the Second Amendment and all things gun-related, go over to thereload.com and check it out. Consider getting a membership. Stephen relies on the membership dues to do various things. Reporting, he has to buy equipment, he has travel expenses, he has to buy some Robitussin. He has a lot going on over there. So do me a favor, go over there, check it out, and consider getting a membership. Nobody else, as far as I know, is doing exactly what he's doing. It's a very unique lane that he is in. So go over there and give him a look and consider supporting him. I'd appreciate it. If
Thank
you can't
you.
Say absolutely at the end of this, like we're gonna have a problem. You're gonna be in breach of contract for coffee.
Oh my gosh. You know, it didn't come on until you start talking. This is always the problem. If you listen to my podcast or what it's only when you I've been talking for a little while that this starts to come out. I haven't been coughing all day. I thought I was pretty far past this, but I'm going to go take some Alka-Seltzer. That's what I like. Alka-Seltzer Plus, by the way.
Very good. Tip.
Well, Chris not Rock sponsored, but
put some Tussin on it. Let that Tussin get down in there, you know. And with that said, Stephen, as always, sir, you have the last word.
Oh, absolutely.